When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
The civil rights that we're enjoying today were hard fought for over 150 years. But every day you're seeing more and more of those rights taken away. A reason why we are in the situation we're in now as a result of integration. Illiteracy is generational. A woman asked me, well, what if the parents can't read? How are the children expected to learn to read? I said, well, you can't just throw your hands up. There are all kinds of programs at libraries, at literacy centers. Every family owes an obligation to their family members to lift one another up. And you know, it's called lift as you climb. That used to be how we thought. But now it's I got mine, you get yours. Being brilliant in a black school gave you no credibility in the integrated white school. And my mother slapped me to the ground because I was making fun of Miss Jenkins, and that was disrespectful. If you have an uneducated population, they don't really understand voting. They don't really understand the issues which are at stake. They don't even understand how the political process works. We just elect black folks because they're black and we're black. If your community looks the same as it did 20 years ago, those black politicians that you've elected aren't working for you. I haven't heard one protest song. In the 60s, you had Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? You had anti-war songs, and you had one group of people who say, well, music ain't never made me do nothing. I ain't never wanted to go gangbang because I would listen to some music. But what music does, in my opinion, it normalizes antisocial behavior. We allow people to continue in their position without any kind of consequence. And therefore, they don't get better, they get worse. We should be more like Nike. If you do something contrary to the brand, you no longer can be associated with the brand. And as long as people sit back and allow what is going on to continue, it won't get better. Marcus Garvey said, not knowing your history is like a tree without roots. And someone else added, and also a tree without fruit.
Welcome to the Rouse Report, where we add historical context to life, love, and politics. The Rouse Report is now in session.
Hey, before you get into this next episode, I want you to like, comment, and share, and subscribe. No, seriously, like, comment, share, and subscribe. That's how we keep adding content just like this. I believe that the content we provide is educational, enlightening, and empowering for our entire community. I know you're going to enjoy this next episode.
You're going to want to write this down. In this episode, we're talking about three things: family legacy, education and integration, and the culture we are passing to the next generation. We look at what happens when families stop sharing their history, when schools stop seeing black children as our children, and when freedom is treated like something that no longer has to be protected. This is a conversation about family reunions, generational wealth, black education, music, civil rights, and responsibilities, because every generation leaves something behind. The question is, are we leaving the next generation stronger or making them start over? Freedom isn't free. People think it is. And why isn't it free? If you look at this country right now, the whole struggle, the whole fight is about the resources of this country. They want to take the money that comes into the government and use it to benefit those it has benefited for the 250 years this country has existed, and to reduce the amount of resources that those of us who were not citizens when this country began, receive. So it's a fight over resources. And seemingly our ancestors understood that every gain had to be maintained. If you have a civil right and it's being taken away. You have a civic responsibility to file a lawsuit and take it before the court, even if the court is unfair, because you can't go down without a fight. And once people realize that you've become so apathetic, that you've become so out of touch with what is going on, that's when you see the, they call it mission creep in the military. That's when you see the creep on your civil rights. You know, the civil rights that we're enjoying today were hard fought for over 150 years. But every day, you're seeing more and more of those rights taken away, and we are not operating as a community or as a collective. And our flagship organizations are no longer, in my opinion, viable. And therefore, those rights are easily being taken away without a fight. If I had to put a reason why we are in the situation we're in now, it would be as a result of integration. Why I say that is because our literacy rate has dropped exponentially since desegregation. I think that, you know, as I said previously, that our civil rights leaders did not foresee the consequences of integration. They thought that by integrating, their children would receive a superior education, when the reality is they've received an inferior education, or an education that is apathetic to their needs, an education that it has a benign neglect. A woman asked me, well, what if the parents can't read? How are the children expected to learn to read? Well, if the parent knows that she can't read, she does have an affirmative responsibility to find a program to help her learn how to read, to make sure that her children learn how to read. There are all kinds of programs at libraries, at literacy centers. That's really just an excuse. I said, well, you can't just throw your hands up. Illiteracy is generational. A parent who doesn't know how to read probably has parents who don't know how to read. They are just doing what generationally has happened in their family. It's up to the current parent to find a program and learn how to read so that they don't duplicate this cycle of illiteracy. You know, that's the whole going back to the family reunion conversation. Yes, I think that every family owes an obligation to their family members to lift one another up. And, you know, it's called lift as you climb. I like that. He ain't heavy. He my brother. You know, that used to be how we thought. But now it's, I got mine, you get yours. We got too many of those kind of people in families, in community. So no one is looking out for anyone. And one of the reasons I think that we are so disjointed is because of integration. I'm reading a book, this book, The Lost Education of Horace Tate. What caught me was he was talking about the losses that occurred as a result of integration. Brilliant teachers in the black high school were relegated to teaching the special needs students in the white integrated high school or to some other area where they had no specialty. Being brilliant in a black school gave you no credibility in the integrated white school. And so quite a number of black teachers were kind of lost in the system, put in positions that they weren't going to succeed in. I can only think about my grandfather, who was a football coach on one of the, at Roosevelt High School here in Palm Beach County, one of the, out of them and Carver, state champion, one of the best teams in the state. And he couldn't get a coaching job once they integrated. You know, I still remember the very last game I went to with him. We went to see Delray Atlantic play Titusville Astronaut. And Titusville Astronaut had a quarterback by the name of Chris Collinsworth. You see him on NFL Sundays now. And Delray Atlantic had a cornerback and quarterback by the name of Bobby Butler, who played for 15 years for the Atlanta Falcons. I could see the sadness in my grandfather's face as he watched the young men play, and he couldn't be out there coaching, even though he had come from one of the premier black high schools in the county. It wasn't like the movie with Denzel, Remember the Titans. There was no merging of the black high schools and the white high schools athletically here. The white coaches remained the white coaches, and the black coaches had to go find other things to do because they weren't going to be coaching these teams. And so integration, in my opinion, led to illiteracy, greater illiteracy, because there was no, you know, black teachers had a stake in you doing well. They knew your mother. They went to church with your family. And so if you're not doing well, they're going to say something at church, and they're not going to be able to face your family at church if they're not teaching. And I remember I had a teacher that had taught my mother, and she was gotten up in years and probably should have retired, but because of the retirement system, couldn't. And she had a hearing problem. And she called my mother because of my behavior in class. And after my mother got off the phone with this teacher, she told me that that was Miss Jenkins. And I said, what? And that was what I would do because she couldn't hear you. She would say, what? When you would speak. And my mother slapped me to the ground because I was making fun of Miss Jenkins, and that was disrespectful. I've never had a white teacher call my mother. Not once. Not one time. Now, I've had white teachers send me to the dean or send me to the principal and get me out of their class. And so I think that more of that is happening rather than educating our children and having a vested stake in our children's progress. So how does that all apply? Well, if you have an uneducated population, they don't really understand voting. They don't really understand the issues which are at stake in a political process. They don't even understand how the political process works, and they can't even see the system working against us. And so what we have lazily fallen into is we just elect black folks and expect those black folks to do good by us because they're black and we're black. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be trying to elect black people, but we need to be electing black people who are capable, who understand the system and are not going to allow the system to self-perpetuate status quo. If your community is failing, if your community looks the same as it did 20 years ago, those black politicians that you've elected aren't working for you. Why don't you go grab some coffee or tea?
Squarespace is not only the best place to build your website, but to discover new domains too. Something like topfootballcamp.com for your top football camp, whisperingbloom.com for your silent retreat, or whisperingboom.com for your shouting retreat. Maybe velvetchords.com for your music studio, or existentialglitter.com for your artist studio. With a website from Squarespace, you can build your brand and your business, all at squarespace.com. Get your domain before they're gone with offer code MAKEITREAL for 10% off your domain or website.
Come right back. We did not grow intellectually. During segregation, you were pushed to your limit because there were expectations for you as a student. When we look at desegregation and the civil rights movement, I don't think the leaders who fought for both fully contemplated what they were going to get. And what I mean by that, for instance, in desegregation, what we got was apathetic teachers who, and I'm talking about the white teachers, the black teachers remained the same. They were pretty much put in the same boat as the black students. My mother still cared for her kids, you know, and that really is a difference in white folks and black folks. To this very day, my mother taught 35 years at a predominantly white elementary school, and white children come up to me almost monthly and talk about what a great teacher my mother was, how kind she was. And I can't say that about one single teacher I had in the entire time I was in school that wasn't black, that cared about my education, that cared about my success, that saw me as a person who could one day become a lawyer. I don't know a single white teacher. And so I think the very same miscalculation that was made in the civil rights movement, that the changing of laws would change hearts, is what happened in integration. And we are feeling the effects of that continuing benign neglect to this day, where in my community, we have schools where 80% of the children do not read on grade level, elementary schools. And we all know that by third grade, if you're not reading on grade level, that is a predictor for prison, the pipeline. And so, you know, the loss of community that also came with the loss of a segregated school, you know, when you would have meetings, parent meetings, during the days of segregation, that was really a community meeting. And there were things talked about that weren't just about school. That's where some people got their social education, their news, what was going on in the community, what was going on in the civil rights movement. Many of the civil rights cases, at least in this community, were all related to education, the naivete of our leaders, that they would treat our children the same way we treated our children is what was misguided. And unfortunately, we haven't found a remedy for that even to this day. You know, the one thing that has occurred here in my community is our schools are as segregated today as they were in 1968. And in those schools where they have a large number of black teachers, I am noticing that the students are doing better that the literacy rate is higher in those schools than in the places where there is a minority of Black teachers to Black student ratio. To all those teachers who are walking in the footsteps of teachers of past, I have nothing but accolades to pray upon them, because they're doing the hard work. They're the ones who are going to church and then making a speech and telling the church that, you know, your kids are getting ready for testing, so you need to make sure they have a hot meal before school, and doing the things in the community that are necessary for the children to succeed. But unfortunately, there are, you know, there are teachers that look like me that are just as uncaring about the students as the white teachers. So, you know, we have to lift up those that are doing the job and putting in the work and have the heart for our community and for our children, because I still say our children, not my child. They could see that you had potential. Integration happens. They don't give a damn whether you got potential. They got a 9-to-5. Your academic achievement is irrelevant to them. So you go from one system where you may not necessarily be a predictor on paper, but a Black teacher sees something in you. And so they put the extra time, not only because you're a Black child. You know, we used to say back in those times, our children. Now we say my child. Okay. When they were our children, a child's success was my success. We saw that teacher at the grocery store because we went to Black grocery stores. We saw that teacher at church because we went to the same church. We saw that teacher at the pharmacy because we went to the same Black pharmacists. We saw that teacher at the beauty parlor, at the barbershop. They were members of the community. And as a result, they took a vested interest in our children. You could see a teacher on the street and ask that teacher, how is Junior doing? Or how is Mary doing? And they could say, yay or nay. And the parent would, instead of being in an adversarial relationship with that teacher, be in a cooperative relationship with that teacher and go home and do the corrective measures necessary if they were necessary. Talk about my grandfather that bought the 500 acres of land. But I have another grandfather on my mother's side who did many great things that I'm extremely proud of. And we're going to talk about him on the other side of the break. When I did my DNA research, it's really funny in this sense that the DNA research allowed me to trace my family back all the way to the 1700s, to when my, I guess, fifth grandmother, who was the product of a slave and enslaver, came on the scene. So it would be my fifth and sixth grandmother in Virginia. And ultimately, the line came that we had a family home in Jacksonville, Florida. Well, my fifth great grandfather bought himself out of slavery, got a DDS from Morris Brown College, and then became a trustee at Edward Waters University in Jacksonville. To this day, there is a building on the Edward Waters campus called the Polly Brooks House, which was our family home. I'd been there many times as a very young child, which houses the business administration for the university. And so my family ties to Jacksonville and Edward Waters go very deep. But I never met him. My grandfather's name was Reuben B. Brooks. I never met him. My grandfather never spoke of him. But for this thing called DNA research, I would never have known who he was. Now, once I found out his name, I just Googled him, and he is identified in a book called Laborers in the Vineyard, written by Larry Rivers, a professor at the time at Florida A&M University, as one of the founding members of the AME Church in the state of Florida. So he was a very accomplished person that could have been a longstanding inspiration throughout the family. And so these are the kinds of things that, if you don't know your family history, you know, Marcus Garvey say, not knowing your history is like a tree without roots. And someone else added, and also a tree without fruit. So I think it is imperative that we trace our roots and know our family history, good and bad, because it gives us a sense of being. And, you know, when I conveyed to my grandchildren that, hey, if you don't go to college, you'll be the first person in this family in five generations that wasn't a college graduate. And a lot of families can't say that. Education has always been important to my family. All of my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother were all educators. And so to allow a generation to do less than the prior generation, which had more hurdles to their success in their way, is, I think, a travesty and a disrespect of what your ancestors did in order to put you in the seat that you sit in and that you hold now. And I think that we owe it to our children to be intentional about telling them who and what they are. Our ancestors paved the road so that we could be free, yes, but we owe a responsibility to our ancestors and to the generation coming behind us to keep that road paved. And if we do just what we want to do, there's going to be some brush growing on the road. There's going to be some rocks in the road. There's going to be some hurdles to have to be overcome. If you look at most of the families that have generational wealth, their children have an easier road through life. That's the purpose of gaining generational wealth, is so that your children don't have to do all the things you had to do in order to get where you are. You know, if you look at some of the what are called the historic Black communities, you know, it's not uncommon for them to know generationally families have been friends for two and three generations, because when one person does well, they make sure that everyone else does well and their children do well. And it's just expected that you're going to be able to help one another out. The cooperative community is one of the things that maintaining a strong family unit does. You know, I don't think that anyone can argue that the disintegration of the Black family has caused untold problems, both financially, economically, educationally, and we are seeing that today. In fact, people, you can agree or disagree, but Tuskegee University took a stand that they would not allow their students to wear bonnets, do-rags, and pajamas to class anymore. And there's a community of people who say that you should be able to wear a bonnet or a do-rag to class. And then there's another group of people who say that if you're going to college, you don't have the right. You've paid for an education, not for the right to be able to come any way you want. And an education is preparing you for something in life, something greater than what you had before you got there. And obviously, Tuskegee is trying to prepare you for corporate life, and you can't go to a corporate job wearing a do-rag or a bonnet. And I don't want to get in trouble with my viewers, but I think that far too many of us have gotten into, we should be able to do whatever we want to do. And you will even be called acting white because you dress a certain way every day or you speak a certain way. I think that that is playing to the lesser of us versus the higher achieving that we should be attempting to attain. When you look at the fact that the vast majority of record labels are not run by African Americans, and you listen to the lyrics in the songs and how they denigrate women and how they are so sexually explicit. And then, you know, I see young children in the back of a car listening to sexually explicit music. And you have one group of people who say, well, music ain't never made me do nothing. I ain't never wanted to go game bang because I would listen to some music. But what music does, in my opinion, is it normalizes antisocial behavior. You know, there's a song out there. I got into a debate with some friends on Spend It by Young Miami, where she talks about boosting and stealing. And just so happens, I have seen over the last maybe 4 weeks, groups of Black women pulled over on the side of the road with the trunks of their cars open and the police having them in handcuffs. Now, I know that that didn't all occur because of Young Miami's song, but that mindset that is socially acceptable is reinforced when you have that song, so that younger people hearing it start thinking, well, it's okay to go get that bag. And I don't care if you agree with me or not. I think that, you know, we are probably in one of the most precarious times in our history in this country since Reconstruction. Now, mind you, I'm skipping over civil rights movement. I'm talking to you as a lawyer. Since Reconstruction, and I haven't heard one protest song. In the 60s, you had Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? You had anti-war songs. You had music that mirrored the culture. Now, there are some that say that Spend It mirrors the culture. But is that the culture I want to mirror? The sexually explicit songs, is that the culture I want to mirror? And so I know I'm going to get a lot of feedback on my position, but my position is my position. Sometimes you have to hear the hard truth, whether you like it or not. And I think that our music is not reflective of who we are as a people. You know, I've traveled West, Central, and East Africa, and I've never heard music as vulgar as I have heard here in the United States. You know what? That brings me to one more point, and we'll talk about that on the other side of this break.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
You know, recently I was talking with a pastor friend of mine, and I said, why don't black people have family reunions anymore? And he said, yes, we do. And I said, what do you mean? He said, we don't call them family reunions anymore. We call them a repast, because that's when everybody get together and say, you know, we ought to do better. You know, we should be still having the family reunion. And I know in my family, we haven't had a reunion in probably close to 30 years. When my great-grandparents were alive and my grandparents were alive, I can remember family reunion. It was an annual thing. We met on the family property in Tallahassee, and it was just something that we knew was going to happen every summer, the same week, the same time. And it got me to thinking, what happened? What happened to the traditional family reunion? And I did a post about it, and quite a number of families said that they didn't have family reunions anymore, and others said that they still did. But I would wager to guess that since slavery, that the number of family reunions has diminished as we have become less associated with our family who lives different lives than us. And let me explain what I'm talking about. Far too many families don't have, in my family, for instance, it was the elder brothers who made sure that the family reunion happened every year. They did the logistics for the family reunion. They did the time. They did everything but the menu and the food. But they knew to make sure that everything that was needed to put on the meal, to put on the games, to put on the activities, they handled all of that. And when they began to die off, the younger generation didn't see the importance. It had not been conveyed. And one of the other elements, I think, that created the distance between family members was education. One of the things that Haitian families and Haitian gatherings reminded me of my family was how when you would go to a Haitian house party, the women would be inside and the men would be under the tree talking. And primarily they would be talking about the accomplishments of their children. The same way in my family, at my family reunions, they would be talking about, well, you know, Junior is getting ready to go to Cornell, or so-and-so is going to Howard, or this child is getting ready to get her doctorate at Tennessee State. And unfortunately, I believe that when we look at why families don't get together, it has a little bit to do with some of the family members not having those same educational and social attainment as those that got the doctorate, got the PhD, got the move to the house in the all-white neighborhood, and them having less in common, and the elders having didn't instill that despite the fact that one family member is a college graduate and the other family member is still trying to get themselves on their feet, y'all still family. And irrespective of your economic standing, y'all still family. So your education, your economic standing don't matter. But From the other side, sometimes you have family members who don't have the economic or educational achievement. They have a chip on their shoulder. It's kind of like high school reunions. Everybody don't go back to their high school reunion. Sometimes high school was a bad experience, or they're not where they want to be. And so they don't go to the high school reunion because they're not where they thought they would be at this stage in their life. And so they don't want to face the people who they were at the same level in high school in their minds. And now they're not where they want to be. And they've moved on and are doing these, in their minds, these great things in life, and that they have a chip on their shoulder, the same way the less well-educated in families may have a chip on their shoulder, or the family that members that aren't making a lot of money have a chip on their shoulder. So it can go both ways, but for whatever reason, yeah, they could have a chip on their shoulder that I'm not, that, you know, it's kind of like I'm a lawyer. I had a Super Bowl party and a couple, man and a woman, they weren't married, they were dating, came. And the husband did not want to come in the house because he said, I don't want to hang out with no lawyers. And the woman was able to convince him to come in. He didn't know that I was a former athlete. He didn't know that I was down to earth, that I don't wear my degree on my back. When you come in this house, everybody's the same. And we laugh at the same jokes. And after he got him one or two cocktails in him, when he left after the game, he said, man, I ain't never know you was like that. Now, he'd never met me before. All he'd done is seen some pictures, maybe seen me on TV, in the news, or saw me in other places. He assumed, because I was a lawyer, that I wouldn't be relatable, that I would walk around, I guess, using big words and talking about the law the whole time, when all I wanted to talk about was why the Giants was going to beat the Raiders, you know? And so sometimes people have these preconceived notions about other people that they don't know, and they don't give them a chance. It's kind of like racism that we've talked about so many times, that people have these preconceived notions about someone just because of the way they look, or just because of the degrees they may have, or just because of the profession they may be in, rather than giving that person an opportunity to either dispel that myth or confirm your preconceived notion. And so I think that when it comes to Black families, that you can have both. You can have those who don't want to hang around the people who they feel are not to their standards. And you can have those who feel as though that people who have achieved economically and or educationally may have some disdain for them and their lack of achievement. But at the core of it, we don't have members in the family who bind all of the generations and all of the attainment together. You know, I went to a Seder, which is a Jewish ceremony, and they talk about, and they have different foods that they eat to recognize the times that Jews were in bondage. They have the bitter herbs. They have the, so that you never forget from whence you came. And, you know, in participating in that Seder, I said, Black families need this. You know, we need a historian in the family. There's an African proverb that says, when an elder dies, you lose a forest. And so not having elders that will give you the family history and bind you together, irrespective of your academic or economic achievements, is one of the reasons I think that family reunions are dying or have become almost non-existent in a lot of families. I know they are in mine. But it is something I think that is necessary in these times for our children and our children's children, for them to have connections. Hell, it's smart business in any respect, because you don't want to be dating your cousin. You know, I have done my DNA and met multiple cousins here in Palm Beach County that I never knew existed. And then when we started talking, we found out that we were from the same town in Georgia, from the same people. And then we were able to find our root relative. And they were living in the Glades. And I talked to them every now and then. One of them was a MVP, Man of the Year NFL player from here. And so his father and I have connected. And I would never have known that had I not done a DNA test. But had we continued to have family reunions, I would have known him. I would have known the entire family. So there are benefits. But here's the critical thing. When those Haitian families and the Black American families were talking about their kids going to school and getting into these great colleges, the one thing I never heard was they were coming back to the family business, or that when they got that great education, they were going to use it in order to upbuild the family, that we were going to do something as a family unit. And when I think back about my great-grandfather, I never knew him to own a custom suit. I never knew him to own a car, but he left me 500 acres of land. The material things that we get caught up in for generations past were meaningless. Owning land meant you were somebody. And he owned that land and made money off that land for, I never remember him going to a job. So he was getting the money off of that land until he passed. And, you know, my first memories of him, he had to be in his 60s and he died at 92. And so he acquired that land some way. I don't know that story. That would have been beneficial for me to know, because most of our families had at one time land, property, as they call it. And as soon as the person who acquired it dies, it's split and sold in a New York minute. And it's those kind of lessons that are taught at family reunions. The struggle that's necessary to get 500 acres in land, the why you got that much land. What was the game plan? How could we have enhanced the value of that land? What could we have done now that we have education to make everybody wealthy? That's what I think is missing by not having family reunions anymore. There's some things that major brands like Nike and Converse get right that I think we can implement. But let's talk about that after.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
After this break, I think we should be more like Nike, where if you do something contrary to the brand, you no longer can be associated with the brand, that you no longer put in a position to cause further damage to the brand. We allow people to continue in their position without any kind of consequence, and therefore they don't get better. They get worse. Look at the current regime and the president. He ain't getting better. He's getting worse. And as long as people sit back and allow what is going on to continue, it won't get better. And it won't get better if we don't hold ourselves accountable and to a standard. And what I see is not enough leadership who will speak truth to power. People say that all the time. I speak truth to power. Very rarely do you find people who genuinely speak truth to power. Most people are afraid of the blowback and consequences of the allies that the person who has done wrong by the community, they're afraid of their allies coming against them. But when you know that you can't get hurt by speaking the truth, that the truth shall set you free, I don't see, you know, I fortunately don't have those same fears and have always, you know, my mother told me that the truth will always prevail over evil. It may not prevail at the time. You may have some consequences, but in the long run, you'll be deemed right. And that, you know, you think about Muhammad Ali, when he was banned from boxing and spent time in jail, black folks didn't want to associate with him. But by the time he died, they called him the greatest. So sometimes you have to go against the tide in order to move your people forward. Some things are bigger. You know, Coretta Scott King said that the I Have a Dream speech didn't get her husband killed. What got him killed was a speech in 1967 at Stanford, where he talked about, and one of the phrases I love the most, it's a cruel hoax to tell a bootless man to pull himself up by his bootstraps. And him talking about the economic disparities which were maintained after the passage of the Civil Rights Acts is what got him killed. Malcolm's discussion of taking the United States before the International Human Rights Court at the UN is what got him killed. And so speaking the truth about the condition of your people and providing a real solution and potentially gaining a critical mass of Black people and moving in the same direction has always been dangerous. And, you know, I just read and we had on the show Julia Gaffield, America I Have Avenged, which is the story of Jean-Jacques Dessalines. Whenever he would catch a traitor, he made an example of him. In every successful military operation in the world, traitors had to be made an example of. And we're at a critical stage in our history and in this country that we cannot afford collaborators and traitors. And I'm not saying you do to the traitors what Jean-Jacques Dessalines, what the generals in Vietnam did to traitors in their midst. I am saying that you out the traitors and that you disassociate with them, that they no longer have cachet in your community, that once you are seen as working against the best interests of your people, you can't continue to allow them carte blanche in your community. It is that apathy of action that is maintaining status quo in a lot of communities across this country. No one has said it. I haven't heard anybody talk about the fact that you got Black folks who, you know, and I'll say it to about one of my frat brothers, James Clyburn. The things he's done in South Carolina are contrary to the best interests of South Carolinians, especially Black South Carolinians, but no one holds them accountable. We have an Urban League director here in Palm Beach County that gave an award to a person who tried to make sure that Black contractors didn't get contracts, not only here in Palm Beach County, but across the state of Florida. Gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award. That kind of foolishness being tolerated is why you continue to get status quo. That Urban League director should have been removed for doing something like that, because that is contrary to what the purposes of the Urban League was set up for. Giving a Lifetime Achievement Award to a person who has worked against the interests of Black people trying to economically participate in Palm Beach County is unacceptable. And then to allow that individual to parade around the community as if he's one of us, as if he is, that's acceptable conduct, only perpetuates others feeling that there are no consequences to that behavior, to that collaboration with those who would maintain our second class status. You've gotten this far in this podcast. If this is bringing value, please like, comment, and share, and subscribe. This helps the algorithm to push more content just like this. So the good news is I don't think all is lost. I think that there are enough of us around who remember when we had cohesive family units, when we had family reunions, to take the mantle or the baton and take it to the next generation. We know what worked. We know what didn't work. What is, I think, a primary takeaway from this conversation should be community and collectivism. Wherever we can create community, we should. And not every family, you know, I'm down to the last male in my family. And so I have no problem linking up with other family members who are not necessarily as close in lineage as I am. Because I understand that family is who you make. Friends are the family, you know, God gives you the family that you're born to, and friends are the family we choose. And so I'm not opposed to joining a family that I choose because I have things to offer. And bringing that leadership, lifting up the Black men in the community who are coaches, who spend time with the younger generation. You know, the one thing that I do know we have to do as a Black community is get our young people involved. And they need to be involved at an early age, and they need to feel as though they have a job, a duty, and a responsibility. If we can do that, you know, the one thing I saw in when I was running for office and going to churches is a lack of young people. We have to get young people back into something. For some, it might be church. For others, it may be the NAACP or some organization. I really don't know. But what I do know is we have to get our young people in close proximity to our middle-aged and older members of our community. You know, there's a Bible verse that talks about the strength of the youth and the wisdom of the, or the gray hair of the elder. And it's a metaphor for the wisdom of the elders. Those two combined are an unbeatable combination. And so we have to do those things necessary to bring them together. And I think taking an interest in our local schools where the critical mass of Black students exists, we have Divine Nine. A lot of those members are school teachers, and they can tell us where our need, where the need is greatest. We have to have a communication system in our community where people tell us what's going on. You know, if you're in the system, it makes little sense for me to try to go learn the system from the start, when you can give me the quick and easy version so that I can then begin to fit in, get in where I fit in. And we'll have to take leadership from school teachers and from other folks in the community. And then at the end of the day, everybody has to be held accountable, from our leadership on down to our parents. Because if there's no accountability to the community loses. Let me tell you something. If you're so insecure in what you do, then you're probably not very good at it anyway. You know, a closed hand can never receive or give. And so, you know, one of the young men that works with me used to ask me, why are you giving that lawyer all your pleadings and all your discovery? I said, because I could give it to him all day, but he still can't do it with my swag. He, not me. I got a way of thinking that he can't duplicate, no matter how hard he tries. Because if you want to really know how to be great, it's to go watch somebody that's already great. And then you put your own swagger to it. You put your own, add your own salt, your pepper. You know, everybody can cook ribs, but it's only a couple of masters. And that's in every profession. You know, some people like cinnamon on their ribs. I don't. Some people like their ribs to be spicy. I don't. Some people just like salt and pepper on their ribs. But some people like a little garlic. And some people like a little, that Zatarain's. And some people like some pepper and some, you know. And so you can give a person the entire recipe and they still not be able to duplicate your work. And so I've never, ever been fearful of sharing what I know with someone else, whether it be a lawyer, whether it be a leader, an activist, because I know that the way I think is individual to me. I have enough self-confidence to believe that no one can do it better than me. Now, if, for instance, you happen to meet a shining star that does do it better than you, well, then you got the credit for making that person the best. You know, everybody talks about who made Rihanna. Jay-Z gonna always be talked about in the conversation about Rihanna. And the list can go on and on and on, but I've never had a fear of teaching someone my skill set and them superseding me. And if they do, I'm proud of them, and I'm still going to get mine because there's enough out here for everybody. For those people who want to discount the state of Black America, look at the numbers. Numbers don't lie. Look at the prison population numbers in terms of the ratio of African-American men who are in prison. Look at the number, the fact that 600,000 women lost their jobs in the last year and 800,000 Black men lost their jobs. Look at the educational attainment numbers. So she can live in a bubble if she chooses. But numbers don't lie. And, you know, the one thing that I suspect will happen is that the current regime will attempt to start cooking the numbers or start producing numbers. So you would have an ability to have some view into what is really going on. But the reality is highest poverty rate is among African Americans, or we're in the bottom three classes, highest illiteracy rate. Black women, fortunately, are the most literate population in America. So for a Black woman, certainly, they are doing better than the population as a whole. But for the most part, if you look at the numbers, the Black community is not much better than they were prior to desegregation and the passage of our civil rights laws. Today, we talked about three kinds of inheritance: family history, generational wealth, and responsibility. We looked at why reunions matter, how education changed after integration, and why every generation must leave the next one stronger. This episode is really about one question. What are we passing down? Here's the assignment. Talk to the elders in your family. Learn the family story and decide what you will protect for the next generation. because money can be lost, land can be sold, and history can disappear. But when a family knows who it is, it has a better chance of knowing where it's going. Subscribe to The Riles Report for conversations about Black history, family, and culture. And if you have a story that can educate, enrich, or empower the Black community, use the guest form in our bio or visit richriles.com. Let's continue the conversation in the comments. And as we always say on The Riles Report, any day you don't learn something new is a wasted day. And on The Riles Report, we don't have wasted days. Until next time.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.